Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Adele Stan, a journalist based in Washington, D.C., who specializes in covering the intersection of religion and politics. She is currently the editor of Right Wing Watch, a weekly columnist for the American Prospect, and a contributor to SiriusXM Progress. And her latest article at the American Prospect is Trump and the Rise of 21st Century Fascism. Welcome to Background Briefing, Adele Stan.
Always great to be with you, Ian.
Well, thank you, Adele. And your article, I think, makes a very, very important case, and that is that Donald Trump is a neo-Nazi, but if he's able to get away with the unconstitutional activity that is going on now, has been since he was elected, and is likely to increase in terms of his authority, if a Kavanaugh gets on the court, Kavanaugh's already said that presidents should get more power. Well, God, giving this guy more power, that ought to wake people up. And it looks as though he's going to, we know from a few days ago that he's going to fire Don McGahn, his counsel. He's definitely going to fire Sessions.
It really looks that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, the minute he can, probably either before or certainly after the elections. And then that will enable him, through the Vacancy Act, to get rid of Rosenstein and to shut down Mueller. And the real key then will be, and this will be America's come-to-Jesus moment, will the Republicans rise up or will they just accept it? And I suspect the latter will be true.
I agree with you. I mean, this is what I think is even more frightening to me, Ian, than the rise of Donald Trump, is the willingness of the Republican Party to have this neo-fascist as their standard bearer and to allow him to to usurp all of this power, including theirs, right? Including theirs, by not being any kind of a check on him, by using their position as the majority party, not, to thwart any kind of investigation, to create obstacles for the investigators by, demanding ridiculous requests for documentation that is part of an active criminal investigation, which, of course, they're not going to get that. All that kind of stuff. I mean, this Republican Party is really very happy to be brought to its knees by this guy because it's all about power.
Well, I can understand from their point of view that they don't want to, just before the election, say, oh, oops, we made a mistake. The leader of our party is a kleptocrat and a criminal who is controlled by a hostile foreign power. That's a hard thing for the American people to get their heads around. So I'm not excusing the Republicans.
No, but there's a space between getting rid of and keeping a check on him, right?
Well, that's what the Constitution says, that the legislative branch is in a check and balance on the executive branch.
Exactly.
That's American as apple pie in the U.S. Constitution.
Right, and their refusal to take up that role in any, whether it's the deregulation of the EPA or whether it's, whatever it is. There's no check on him whatsoever, none whatsoever. And then their willingness to in the case of, say, Devin Nunes on the the House Intelligence Committee, or Chuck Grassley in the Senate Intelligence Committee, to create all kinds of obstacles to people who are actually, who have been appointed to do an investigation of the president. Right?
No. So. Yeah. Well, Grassley's the Judiciary Committee, but the other guy, Burr.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. Sorry.
Burr is on the Intelligence Committee.
He's been
reasonable, and
he's more reasonable. Grassley, though, capacity as the Judiciary Committee chairman, has been an obstructionist as well.
Of course. And preceding you, Adele, on today's program on this Labor Day weekend, I was talking with Jason Stanley, the philosopher at Yale, whose new book is How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. And it's an extraordinarily deep dive into the history of fascism and how it relates to the current situation here in the United States. And he identifies 10 pillars of fascist politics and charts their horrifying rise and deep history. So let's go to our neo-Nazi leader. He's not yet Mussolini or Adolf Hitler, but I think he's shown some distinct signs of that he basically believes in a fascist ideology and is incredibly sympathetic to far right-wing nutcases in this country, really dangerous, marginal people like Alex Jones. Last week, he ranted at 5:30 in the morning. He tweeted out an attack on Google. And most of the coverage on that got it wrong, because if you actually listen to what he said later in a photo op when he was ranting about Google, he was talking about how they're upsetting a whole bunch of people in this country, and what Facebook and Google and Twitter are doing is really bad, and it's upsetting a lot of people, and basically threatened to come after them. Well, he's carrying Alex Jones's water. It's all about Alex Jones being shut down.
Absolutely.
And I cannot for the life of me understand why people in the press didn't notice that that's what he was talking about. It's not just the algorithms in Google that he's complaining about. That's something he learned from some stupid right-wing article he read. But he really made a stand in support of Alex Jones, who is being shut down by Google and Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter.
Right, right. And that is he's doing two things, right? This whole meme on the right of ostensibly being censured. First of all, what they did was people like Alex Jones and others who have been other far right figures who have been banned from various platforms. They're banned because they violated the terms of service of these companies. In fact, my colleague Jared Holt here at Right Wing Watch was the guy who noticed Jones was still being hosted by Spotify and looked at their terms of service and saw Jones in direct violation of them and made that an issue. So you have it operating on two levels. Yes, you do have Trump supporting Jones, without a doubt, and that is where this whole meme, this theme of, oh my gosh, the tech companies are all censoring conservative thought. Well, I mean, if crazy, racist conspiracy theory is conservative thought, well, first of all, I don't know. The old school conservatives would not have wanted to quite own that. But aside from that, so you have it to be Jones's personal crusade or creed de coeur, whatever you want to call it, and then you have the sort of the ideology behind what Jones is saying about his banning by all of these different entities. And of course, he's a purveyor of fake news, and so this is another way of saying, don't believe what you see. Don't believe, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? So it's operating on two levels, but you're right. And I'm not surprised the mainstream media missed it, though, Ian, that they're not as sharp as you. Because they're still grappling with the reality that at the heart of power in Washington, D.C. are these white nationalists, neo-fascists, right supremacists, that they're in the White House. I mean, just last week, Larry Kudlow, a Wall Street guy who is now chairing the Council of Economic Advisors, was found to have invited one of Richard Spencer's best pals, Peter Brimelow, to his birthday party. You know what I mean? It's like, no, this is not like, these are not just like fringe hangers-on of this administration. This administration is deeply entwined with these movements.
Well, there are good people on both sides,
Fine, very fine people.
Fine people, right.
Very fine people.
Right. And they have those very sharp uniforms, the nice brown ones and the black ones.
Well, I mean, that's where it gets really dicey, right? Because you do have, the rank and file of these movements, of these far-right movements, whether they be, neo-Nazi, neo-pagans, or far-right neo-Confederate Christians. They have rank and file, often comprising rather unhinged people. The leader can make a claim, and the follower goes and does something crazy, just as the guy who drove the car into the crowd of protesters in Charlottesville did. I mean, so that's where the brown shirt aspect you know, comes in. I mean, these guys who look like a bunch of cosplayers, you know, with their homemade, you know, plywood shields and Confederate flags can become, you know, a brown shirt type force.
Well, Jones, of course, makes up the craziest stuff, and Trump apparently believes it.
Right.
But a better example, I think, is Trump making this tweet in support of the alleged victimization of white farmers in South Africa and how they're being murdered by blacks. It's just simply not happening. Land reform is happening, but not the murder of white farmers. And so Trump tweets out in support of something that's not real. I don't think there's any other way to interpret it. That's where his sympathies lie. I mean, do you see any other reason? I mean, is the neo-Nazi base in this country so important that he has to cultivate it?
Well, what it is that it's not that you have a strong plurality of Americans who would identify as neo-Nazi or neo-Confederate, but you do have a strong plurality of white Americans who harbor very racist views and anti-immigrant views, which are, of course, really rooted in race, and misogynist views, which are really rooted in, you know, the whole white patriarchy kind of construct that you find in evangelical circles and other places. So what you will have is it looks like a tiny, you know, remnant fringe, you know, left over from, you know, World War II and the Civil War. But they are expressing things that more polite people believe but won't say and who are sympathetic to. So, and these far-right folks have very effective social media networks, and the memes and themes that they push on social media do get picked up elsewhere in the political sphere. And that's why there is such consternation right now. It's not simply that Jones is, you know, losing some of his reach, which affects the monetization of his business, but it's also that those, you know, those tropes have to take different avenues in order to be expressed. Now, with Tucker Carlson advancing this trope that rose up from the far right in both South Africa and in the U.S. And, you know, as soon as he said it, the alt-right, we have a post up on Right Wing Watch that shows this. You know, the alt-right just was delighted. You know, they were all over Twitter, or those who have been kicked off Twitter and are on their own form of Twitter called Gab. You know, they were all just, you know, they were just lighting up. They were so thrilled. And then when Trump picked it up, oh, my goodness, you know, he's speaking truth. You know, that's all they needed to hear.
So with Right Wing Watch, is there any way that you can get the message to shame Trump supporters? Because I think, first of all, the median income of Trump supporters was something like $70,000, and the Democrats fretting over the loss of the white working class is a waste of time.
Yeah, no, that's not who the problem is.
Exactly. So how do you get to those people with 401ks that basically they just think the liberals and the progressives are all in a lather over nothing, and they think it's all political. They think mm-hmm. that the Democrats are trying to steal Trump's victory through using Mueller, and they are completely tuned out of anything that's going on that people on MSNBC are glued to. And they basically think that, you know, he's doing a great job because the 401ks and the stock markets had an uninterrupted bull market for 3,500 days in a row. So how do you fight that reality? How do you prick that bubble?
Well, I don't know that there's any way to convince those people otherwise until their fortunes fail. I think the game is an electoral game at the moment, primarily, and it's based around turnout. Because here's the thing, if the Democrats can keep their coalition together, right, and that's always the challenge for Democrats. They you know, it's not a homogenous constituency in the way that the Republican Party is. It's multiracial, it's multicultural, all of that. But if the Dems keep their if they can keep their coalition together, which is easier when you're in opposition to a force such as Trump, but really amp up the turnout, the voter turnout game. I mean, that what you see in Florida with the election of with the primary election of Andrew Gillum, right? I mean, he was not projected to win. That was because a lot of people turned up to vote who, you know, had not been voting in primaries. So they weren't likely voters.
Right. But just a minor correction. There was a greater Republican turnout than a Democrat turnout in both.
There was.
In both Florida and Arizona last week.
Yes, in these primary elections. But the Democrats, I'm not saying that there was, you know, more Democrats than Republicans. What I'm saying is the Democrats vastly upped their own turnout that compared to previous primary elections. And it's always hard to engage people in primaries, especially if you haven't been working at it for, you know, a generation, which I don't think the Democrats really have been. I think that the coalition represented by Democrats is a greater proportion of the country than the constituency represented by Trump, but they need to turn out. Now, we still have a structural and constitutional problem, and that I don't know how we fix, and that's the Electoral College when you get to the presidential race. You know.
But well, that's another a conversation for another day.
For another day.
Right. But I thank you for joining us on this Labor Day weekend, and I appreciate the conversation, Adele.
It's always great to be with you. I hope you get a day of rest. And I'd love folks to follow me on Twitter, at Addie Stan.
And again, I've been speaking with Adele Stan, who is a journalist based in Washington, D.C., who specializes in covering the intersection of religion and politics. She's currently the editor of Right Wing Watch, a weekly columnist for The American Prospect and a contributor to SiriusXM Progress. And her latest article at The American Prospect is Trump and the Rise of 21st Century Fascism. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back looking into the resistance and its roots in the American Revolution.